Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch for each week. Ben and I bring you the Insider's Guide to Property Investing. Welcome back to the couch.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. Always love this part of the week.
Mate, it's a good part. Hey, I haven't had a chance to tell the listeners of the significant development with your personal growth of you over the summer.
What have I done?
You posted on Facebook. You put a photo up.
I had to have some help.
And you put some emoticons up.
And it's probably the first post that I put up that's not business related.
Ivis sent me a little note. I didn't notice until Ivor sent me a note to say, Bryce, check this out. Ben's posted with emoticons.
Emoticons?
Emotion icons. Emoticons.
Oh, emojis.
Is that what they're called? You're teaching me now.
Well, mate, Jane called them emojis, but when you say emoticons, I don't understand what that means. But I have an idea, because when I had a look at them, right, there's one missing.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Okay's not on there.
You haven't seen the one where it does that?
No. That's no okay.
For those of you who can't see what we're doing, you know the old the circle.
Or if you've ever done scuba diving, you do the okay symbol.
Mate.
But no. Sorry. Seriously, is there an okay on there?
Sorry, listeners.
I'm getting a nod from Ivis to say there actually is an okay. I couldn't find, anyway, we'll take that offline.
Yeah. I can assure you it's there because I use it all the time. Well, and I do one of these a lot too. I know it doesn't help for people who are listening.
That's a good symbol for radio. That's rock and roll. That's rock and roll, heavy metal.
Yeah, and every now and then that's the
What's the one where you drop that and you do the thumb and the pinky? Yeah, what's that called?
Surface hang loose.
Hang loose, is it? Right, okay. Our listeners might actually.
Meanwhile, back at the podcast.
What are we here for?
Meanwhile, back at the podcast. Right, okay. We're here to talk about Q&A Day.
Beautiful.
I think it's well known that we love Q&A Day.
We do.
And guess what?
What's that?
99 not out.
Who is?
We are.
Oh! That's right, next week, Australia Day.
Australia Day.
100th episode.
Yeah, cool. So are you going to come in here with
no.
Australia Day? Are you going to have Australia boardies on?
Oh, I've got a few ideas, I've got a few ideas. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
Obviously, there have to be listening jokes, audio jokes. They can't be,
No one's going to listen. Everyone will be out cooking lamb, listening out at the beach, watching the Sky Show.
Triple J's, Oz 100 or something like that.
Mate, in Perth, the Sky Show is enormous. You know, on Australia Day, everyone turns up to the foreshore, South Perth, the city, Kings Park.
40,000 citizens.
Having a cheap shot at the Perth people, are we? But they turn up in droves, and it is a big, big day. Yes. And then you've got Australian Crawl out on the patio.
That's not Australian Crawl. Gang.
Ramps, mate, it's a great day. But they don't quite do it on the East Coast as well as Perth, I've got to say.
No, we used to do the, look, now here's show me age, Eon FM and all these, you know, sort of old. They used to do a fireworks show, but that's all being wrestled by New Year's Eve now. Yeah. So, but they used to do it to music and all that.
Perth doesn't spend the money on New
Mate,
Year's
Mate, people don't listen for us, our rubbish banter. Let's get into what we can actually do.
People don't listen to us for the Collingwood rubbish banter. The rest is okay.
I'm sure they want to know more about
Q&A Day, folks. We've got one from Fernando. Hi, Bryce and Ben. First of all, I want to thank you for all the knowledge you share for free in every podcast. Good on you, 3X. Exclamation marks. This is commitment. I've been hooked since the 1st of September, 1.5 weeks ago, so kind of date stamp that.
Yep.
And I've been listening to it at a ratio of 4 episodes per day.
Mm. So hardcore.
Someone wants to do that, I can knock it off for 25 days at that ratio. Yep. So thank you. It took me no time to realise that I needed to read your book, so it arrived last Friday, and not even the epic match between the Hawks and the Cats stop me from reading the first 50 pages.
Oh, that's good.
I'm sure the content in there will help us meeting our goals, no doubt about it. With that being said, I want to quickly share with you our situation, as I believe we really need our $10 haircut to be fixed.
Ooh.
Episode 1.
That's good. If
any listener hasn't heard episode 1,
go back to that.
$10 haircut to be fixed. And with 1 or 2 minutes of your ice, I'm sure we are going to get the most out of the book. My wife and I moved from Sydney to Melbourne 4 years ago, without even knowing where its north was.
Come down to get a bit of culture.
Ooh, there we go, Sydney Siders. We rented an apartment in the beautiful East Melbourne for a year as we wanted to enjoy this beautiful city lifestyle, but also knowing that we needed to buy a property after that time, so we were not building someone else's future. So we bought with our hearts, a 3-bed, 2-bath studio plus man cave, old house out in Donvar, which is over near Doncaster in the east Melbourne, with the vision of slowly renovating it while starting a family. Be surrounded by green, live the Australian dream, and on top of that, generate a good growth on the property in the medium term. We love the area, but now after two kids, our cash flow is quite dry. Don't we all know that? And we need to do something about it. In brackets, classic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, can we sell a kid?
Well, we'd encourage him maybe to, anyway. Probably.
No, just of course, silly comment. Yeah. Totally retracted.
Our first bet is to sell Donvar. It's not in a good suburb from a rent perspective in yield. But whatever money we can make from the sell, we bought it at 520, the medium is 650, and we've been slowly renovating a few things. But again, without enough cash to finish it, we are not expecting to make a huge profit into an investment property and then become... rent-vestors. We wouldn't mind a sacrifice moving out to a suburb where rent is half what our mortgage is, i.e. our raw calculations in 3 to 5 years, we could be saving enough to buy the second investment property. Hang in with me, folks. Hang in with me.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I believe the best things Australia has to offer for free, park security... it says futty. What do you reckon futty is?
Oh, no idea.
Culture, etc.
No idea.
So for now, not living in the suburb we prefer is not such a big deal when thinking on our medium long-term goals, which are given to our kids the best that we possibly can, best start we possibly can, and to start a passive income for our future ASAP.
Cool.
On the other hand, if we keep the property... We need to put a considerable amount of cash on top of the rent in order to pay the mortgage. So our savings wouldn't be enough to think in buying a good investment property anytime soon. We will regret not keeping this property. Will we regret not keeping this property?
Yeah.
Fernando, we've got some grammar stuff that's stripping me up here.
That's all right.
I can guarantee you that
we... Throw him under the bus.
Ben? Yeah. I can guarantee you that, but don't see any other immediate solution. Anyway, guys, thanks again. Hopefully we can make the right moves so we can afford to chat to you guys on our whole journey. So I think it's either do we keep or do we sell.
Yeah. Oh, and is there a rent vesting piece in there as well?
Yeah.
All right. So happiness comes from big rocks in the jar. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, some of the critical points that we like to talk about is starting with your goal setting, and then there might be that big C word that has to pop in there every now and then.
Collingwood?
No, that's a good C word.
Compromise.
Okay, so as in life, you know, we can't always get what we want, but, you know, we certainly can strive to look at that. So, you know, in a very top line point, what I'm saying is the cash flows will tell the story and then we'll work out exactly what we want. So why are people now rent vesting more than they're owning? Because they're sort of saying, well, you know what? If we've got our money invested in some bricks and mortar elsewhere, so we're investing the difference between what it would cost us to own and have a big owner-occupied mortgage in a location, they can go off and, you know, invest that money elsewhere. So I think Fernando and his lovely wife and kids need to sit down and try and work out what's important to them. In terms of Donvale, that's a middle ring suburb.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. It is actually, don't disregard Donvale. And this is sometimes...
More so than ever in what's happened in the last 12 months where affordability is pushing further out.
Totally. Melbourne's got spare capacity in that middle ring. It absolutely has spare capacity. I mean, if you overlay a map of Sydney for million-dollar locations and you overlay a map of Melbourne, in fact, we might even pop that up on the website. Ivis is again just nodding. She's just such a good sport. Our Ivis is such a good sport.
Yeah, pull that up, Ivis. Thank you.
So that'll sort of show that where there is potential, you know, like, and income differentials aren't that great. You know, Melbourne is basically the Brian's Trust of Australia in terms of it focuses on its education piece and its services piece. Sydney is the financial capital of Australia and obviously trades on the most magnificent harbour in the world.
Mm.
So, from lifestyle and also, Brains Trust areas, Melbourne's pretty good. So, all of a sudden, I'm very keen to try and hold on to Donvar.
Yeah.
You know, and try and springboard from that property. Now, if we're highly geared and there's no opportunity there, then ultimately it might just be a time thing. We might just have to focus on getting those savings working, you know, using our money smarts, being prudent in terms of discretionary spending, and we could start to see a short-term goal. Now, short-term goals should be, you know, 3 to 5 years. So if we're then in a, you know, we're making decisions and we're making the moves to acquire property, that's true. You know, and any household who's looking at this as a situation should be focused on what's the most important things to us, and it should be really family and health.
Mm.
You know, I make a funny comment about, you know, selling health a kid,
is,
but...
Health
but,
is real wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. Health. Say that again.
Health is real wealth. But don't you look at me like that. How's this one? No, happiness equals big rocks in the jar. That's like Yoda right there.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. So, well, you know, it's 2017, mate. We've got a year.
We've got big plans this year.
Mm. So the reality is that's the way I would start to slice it down. Often the right solution is around what's important to you. So, you know, money is a byproduct of making smart decisions, but it's not everything, right? It doesn't buy happiness. We know that. But the people who are interested in building wealth and having future choices, it's all connected. So make sure you work out what is important to you. And if we have to compromise, there's some adjustments there. But usually when we're sitting down and advising clients, that's exactly what we're looking for. We're trying to look for the best solution. And there's moving, you know, things are going to change in life. There's going to be some surprises that are in your control and out of your control. So, you know, this is a journey.
There's also a default. There's a learning here, Ben, too, about a default. Well, quite often you see someone say, oh, it doesn't feel like it's right, so I'll sell.
Yeah.
And it's forgetting... And we'll see what profit, but it's forgetting that there's costs to get out and costs to get in, and that's eroding at your wealth. So the next property has got some serious shoes to fill,
yes,
just to get them back to break even. So,
yeah,
which is why you said it beautifully. Cash flows will tell the story, but if they have the cash flows to maybe keep it, maybe rent best in another location so that they can take a bit of a medium to long term perspective. But that default position of let's just sell and start again.
Yeah.
I remember going through the exercise with a mate of mine on the Gold Coast, and he said, well, I'm just going to sell and downsize to a smaller house for cash flow. We actually went through the numbers, showed him what the stamp duty and all that looked like, and then he just realised he was going to go into a smaller house, be no better off, and have eroded his capital base.
Yeah.
So it's a default that people probably need to... The default needs to be, can we keep it?
Yeah.
Rather than, do we need to move it
on? Look, I had a conversation just this morning on the way into work, and you know, this particular guy is in circles. He's, you know, do I sell, do I hold, do I rent vest? And I said, ultimately, it is going to come down to every time we have this conversation, because we've had it probably running now for about 9 months, you're calling me because you know that the right decision is to potentially sell this property.
Mm.
Now, that's unusual, because obviously I'm big on sort of...
Say the other way around.
Yeah, no. You know, I'm big on sort of saying keep the property and you know, move on from it. But the reality is that this guy's a very good practitioner at what he does. And he loves living in the inner city areas. So he's not willing to compromise to the outer suburbs. So he's worked out where he is willing to compromise. So to get that upsized property, and we're upsizing into a fantastic location in Sydney, we're going to have to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we just can't cash flow it just on one wage.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is like, well, if that's the most important thing to you, and then you can do your craft and come home to a home that's yours, and as opposed to the house that you currently own is not what you know, it's not making you happy.
Mm.
You've got to move to that story. So again, that's where it's a lifestyle choice, and then the investment stuff can come after that. So once we bed that property down and get enough equity and the cash flow coming in, we'll start to build a portfolio in behind that. But it's a tough decision for every household to make. They really do, you know, because it's like, it's the fear of the unknown. You know, it's making that call and sitting down and talking to an independent party that cares, but not that much. You know, there's that famous line from Herb Cohen. He basically says, you know, the reason why I can negotiate better for you is because I really want the best outcome for you, but I'm not emotionally attached to each decision. Now, but when I'm listening and asking the right questions of you, you are actually giving me the answer.
Mm.
You are telling me, you know, I'm getting the weighting of each of the two options or three options you're putting out there, and I'm steering to that option that you really want validated, you know, and that's the beauty of the work we do.
Care, but not that much. Love it. So, I mean, that's the reason why if I was buying a house, I'd get you to bid for me and vice versa. You just absolutely. Take a little bit of the...
owner-occupied purposes, you're 100% correct. Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, Monique, taking your advice, but what now? Okay, so it's like, okay, when you say that, talk to me more, Monique. Given the projected apartment oversupply, should we sell our inner city one-bedroom flat to put towards our next home? Or is it still a good investment worth holding on to?
Yeah, so it's kind of an extension of the previous one in to a certain extent. But at the risk of sounding boring, it just depends on their situation. Because although there is an oversupply in Melbourne, it's not always going to be the case. Because the sheer numbers, I wouldn't recommend someone make a decision to buy now. But if they have one, there's 1,400 people a week moving here.
Yeah.
And so there's a big population pool that are coming in that at least... If you sell it and pay the agent's fees, and if there is any gain, any capital gains tax, again, you know, reiterate what I said before, the next property that you buy has a lot of pressure on it to deliver just to break even. So it depends on your income, it depends on your surplus cash flow each month, and it depends on what if that's going to hamstring string your next move.
And the location.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were in Perth or if you were in Brisbane, like, you know, Monique, we haven't actually got where the property is. Now, I like the word flat.
Mm.
So that could say to me, if it's a flat, it could actually have an outdoor backyard, outdoor courtyard area. So it could be in a smaller block. So even though there might be a projected oversupply of new apartments coming in there, these older flats could actually be a gold mine, because these newer apartments, roughly with the same floor, per square meter floor size, can actually be selling for $150,000 more than your flat. So they are, over time, going to artificially drag the value of your property upwards. So again, this is one of those classic cases. Now, you also, towards our next home, and this is the interesting piece. So
big rocks in the jar.
Big rocks in the jar. You know, if we don't have that home, and, you know, so it's almost like, do we release the equity from this one to put towards the new home? That's ideally the way we'd love to go, as opposed to having to sell out of this one, unless, you know, it is in these locations where for the next 10 years. So there is an opportunity cost measure here that we would need to analyse. And, you know, we're doing some exciting things this year, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to also, you know, give some insights into, you know, these types of decisions, whether you hold or sell.
Yeah. So that's a good pick up, Ben. The word flat, hopefully that's the same definition as what we you know, call a flat. But look, I'm actually a big fan of, you know, one-bedroom apartments used to be, you know, developed by the developer in the corner in the shade, you know, and it was the last one to sell.
Yep.
Now it's actually something that people, you know, with lone person households being so large, it's actually a demographic that's growing. And if you're near lifestyle drivers. So, yeah. So, there's a fair bit going on there, Monique, but depends on your situation, depends on where it is, depends on the type of property, and depends on what your next move would look like.
Research, research, research.
Oh, very good, very good. All right, I've got another one here, Ben, which I think, again, it's a bit detailed, but I think the detail helps the listeners in the learning.
And I always like the fact that you read these long ones out.
Well, did you see how tongue-tied I got on the last one? It's like, what the? It's like being in the sound booth with Veronica, and she's kneecapping me while I'm trying to get my voiceovers. Yeah,
very good.
All right, hi Ben and Bryce, love the podcast. Oh, this is devastating, this bit. Hi Ben and Bryce, love the podcast, maybe even more than location, location, location.
Well, that's way down Missouri, isn't it?
Nasty. Like, how do we even know if the English couple would be, you know, because mine's location, 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 Australia. So that's they're not even here to defend themselves. Yeah,
they were talking about the English
version. Yeah. There are two parts to my question. Part one, 2 years ago, my wife and I purchased a property 5 kilometres from the Brisbane CBD for $530,000. Mm. Unfortunately, we only spoke to one bank, didn't seek advice, and fixed the whole loan for 3 years at 5.05.
Mm.
So have no offset and no way of paying more off the loan than the prescribed quarterly payment amount. After listening to your podcast and just started reading your book just this week, we have since found a decent mortgage broker. Hopefully it's investment savvy.
Hopefully.
And are considering refinancing and setting up the Money Smart structure.
Brilliant.
We are considering an interest-only loan, as discussed in your podcast, to give us the flexibility to purchase another property in the next 2 to 3 years. But currently, we are getting conflicting advice from our financial planner, who is against interest-only, and our mortgage broker, who is telling us cash is king in your offset account, and we should consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like an investment-savvy mortgage broker yeah, right there.
I think that's validated, the mortgage broker.
The idea is to pay the same amount as we are paying now with a P&I loan, but go on to interest only, 100% variable, 4.3% interest rate, and let the cash stack up in the offset. What are your thoughts on this? We probably should cover that first.
Yep. Do we want to do that first?
Yep.
Okay. So first of all, when you're saying principal and interest repayments, obviously what you're talking about there is, as the loan amortizes over time, at the start of the loan, you're paying a lot more interest than you are principal. That's the way they work out the 360 months of repayments over a 30-year term. Now, the reality should still be, when you're running your Money Smarts, is hypothetically in your mind, you're thinking that you will keep paying the principal off the loan. Don't do that.
Mm.
What you, you know, your budget and what the Money Smarts is all about is basically saying, do your budget and then work out the weekly provision for your living and lifestyle expenditure, and then you, that's your money. So, you know, if you run out on Tuesday and the next weekly allocation is Thursday, open the pantry, get the baked beans out, and just live within your means, because this is where the slippage occurs. You know, there's lots of startups around the world trying to save pennies and you know, rounding up dollars like Acorn and all these types of money management sort of solutions out there. They're doing exactly, you know, what we're saying to people to do, and that is live within those means. Everything goes back in the offset then. Mm. So it doesn't matter.
Mm.
So the whole argument of principal and interest is out the window, other than control.
Well, it's just a generational thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's your parents told you to pay cash for everything, get out of debt as quickly as you can. So yep. It's just this, what's the word? It'll come to me. Conditioning.
Yes,
conditioning.
Correct. It's so, totally conditioning.
But what you just described is there's no difference. In fact, it's a positive difference. It improves your flexibility.
Yeah.
And you're giving them, you're actually helping them look to the horizon 10, yeah. 15, 20 years down the track.
Yeah.
Because the house or the property that they live in may want to serve as an investment property. And if it does, you can just pull all your money out of offset, not change the nature of the loan whatsoever.
Mm.
Therefore, it becomes deductible. And you'll be in the small percentage of the population who can actually do that versus the large percentage of the population who go, geez, yeah. I wish I had 20 years ago had thought this through.
If you are absolutely, and I'm talking 100% sure that this property will never, ever, ever, ever be an investment property, only then will I give you an exemption. Do you know, like it's, and it's a tight exemption. So, because if you know what, some people, if the money's in an account, they spend it. And that's why the living and lifestyle account is a separate account to the primary account.
Mm-hmm.
So where we keep all of our main offset money, effectively, you almost need to say that there is an emergency wall. And, you know, the two presidents, the president and the, you know, the head of the Air Force.
You and Donald Trump have to
get they the have codes. To have the keys to open it up to ever go in there to get some emergency funds. That's the way you should approach it. Because if you approach it with that type of mindset,
yeah.
you then start to look at discretionary spending in a smart light in terms of what's really needed as opposed to critical, important, nice to haves. And then that money starts to build up, reduces interest, and then whammy, 20 years later, you're financially independent, and that's the beauty of it.
Very well said.
All right, so now we've got Ronnie Reed.
Ronnie Reed. Ronnie. Well, that was James Foley, by the way.
Oh, thanks, James. Appreciate that. Ronnie Reed. Hi, guys. Loving the podcast. I only started a month ago, and I'm devouring it. Ben, I don't know if you've been told this before, but when I'm listening to you, I can't help but associate your voice with the radio celeb Fitzy.
It's mine, Whipper, then. Fitzy and Whipper.
Fitzy and Whipper. Okay, so he's the ex-Swans footballer, was he?
Big brother dude.
Oh, right.
Before the game.
Oh, yeah. He's the funny guy.
Yeah, he's the funny guy. Yeah, so you're the funny guy.
Funny guy.
Yeah.
That's not really true. And maybe it's just the voice association. Anyway. And it says here, anyway. My question is, how to start the property investment after 40? Ooh, good question. We are self-employed, and although we have a few savings, it is not near enough for a 20% asked for a deposit. So we can teach him a little bit about that. We don't even have our own home.
Mm.
Should we work towards that first? Thank you, guys.
Well, it's quite often when someone who is in that scenario, because they're self-employed, they don't have super as well. And if they don't have their own home, they're almost in first homeowner territory, which is the hardest category to start from, because you've got to, you know, effectively try and save a deposit. So
starting from ground zero, basically.
And usually chasing your tail, because the market moves quicker than you can save. So there's a couple of things come to mind, but obviously, is there an opportunity to leverage with someone else? Mum and dad is probably the obvious example, so that they can chase their tail. And the other thing, and I know you'll dive into this a bit deeper, but you know, you don't necessarily have to have 20%. So if you stay a rent investor, you drop your LVR down and be prepared to pay mortgage insurance, it might mean that you can get in a bit earlier. And potentially getting on the ladder, even if it is like the previous question, a one-bedroom flat in a nice built-up lifestyle area, which is a lower entry point, so you've got lower mortgage insurance, and then you can start really using the Money Smart system to build up your offset. It might be the leverage for 5 or 6 or 10 years down the track to start building a bit of a snowball running down the mountain. But it is, I'm not going to lie, that's a tough situation to start from.
Yeah, it is. It is. And look, 40 is, after 40, I mean, if we're sort of 49, that's, if we're in our early 40s, the reality for your situation, Ronnie, is you may be, you know, 70 might be the sort of time frame that we've got. So we're going to live longer, all right? So everyone has this vision of retiring at 65 because that's, you know, that's the conditioning that we had when we were growing up. But the reality is, in your case, we've still got 25, 30 years to invest. So there's a couple of things there. I'd want to know more about your self-employment. I'd like to know how you're driving your money, because you might be renting in an area because that's the market that you're working on. I don't know, you could be a lawnmower as an example, or you could, and so you've got this patch, and it's, so you can't really move out of the patch, but the property prices have gone higher than you could, so you might want to stay renting, all right? And if that's the case, then we rent vest. We basically start to, now with the renting, because you're self-employed, part of the house could be classed as business. So that's your, you know, that's your setup. That's where you're working from. So that could be tax deductible against your business. So that's a good use of that money. So that's one piece of the puzzle that I'd want to know more about. I'd want to know exactly what sort of income you're earning, and I want to sort of look at the level of lifestyle. So if there's a really high, not missing out, level of lifestyle here, we're going to have to compromise. We're going to have to make some sacrifices and bring that level of lifestyle down to get on, get into the market. No different than, you know, the whole affordability story. With, you know, those people, yeah, you gotta make some commitments and some compromise. No smashed avocado, and you've got to get back into, you know, getting on the property ladder. Yeah. And so that's what I would do. Now, if let's say we were 55, say Ronnie was 55, expanding on this point a little bit more, if Ronnie's 55, I would probably be looking to buy a home. And the reason why I say that is because pensions is going to be important for him and his wife potentially. So when you rent a property, you know, or your principal place of residence is basically not means tested against the pension. So to have that asset and potentially sell out of that asset later on, if we're going into a nursing home, can potentially be a good one. All right. As opposed to, even though when you're renting, you know, you don't have any assets, so your pension is still going to be true. But I would like to see someone who's later in life into that type of owning their own home. If they haven't gone on a rent investing story or something along those lines.
Yeah, well done. Well said, Fitzy. Being self-employed gives them some, it's subject to their accountant too.
Yes.
And depending on which structure they have, they might, if they've got an offset account, they can cash flow through their offset account at certain parts of the month as well. It's a bit advanced, but...
Beautiful.
Last one. Are we going to fit one in, Ivis? Yes,
yeah, I think we're going okay.
This is from Lyle Allen. Hi, guys. Love your YouTube channel.
No one normally says that.
But really? You put a lot of effort into the YouTube channel, Ivis, don't you? Well, actually, it's you and I.
And
love the way you guys look at property. I would like to offer a suggestion for you guys to cover the next podcast. I bought my property at 22 in Kalgoorlie, WA. Mining town. Six hours.
22. Perth. Got early.
I know. Mining towns are dangerous. We bought that property in 2010 and have seen no growth whatsoever. Property was bought in 2005 for $197, and we purchased it for $340 in 2010. Not a bad profit for the previous owners. As soon as we bought it, growth stopped. We are, however, getting 7% gross yield, leased at $460 a week. Mm-hmm. When we then bought a house in a big block in Balladura in the northeastern suburbs of Perth.
Mm-hmm.
We bought that for $450 in 2014. Unfortunately, that house has dropped by around 7%.
Mm-hmm.
We now live in this home, but we leased it at $435. We are now at 90% LVR. Both mm-hmm. properties are 3x2s, with mm-hmm. the Perth property on 760 square metres. This house was bought for $128,000 in 1998 prior to us, just to sort of pour more salt on the wound. Very disheartening for a young couple. Could I get a rough idea on what you would do in a situation, in a completely general sense, in brackets?
Mm.
Also, could you guys discuss ways to get yourselves out of sticky situations like this? I think a lot of people are feeling this kind of pinch right now, especially WA.
Mm.
Cheers, guys. Love your work. It's from Lyle.
Yeah. Tough. Tough.
It's hard to answer without pouring
more misery on it. So the first thing is, number one, continue with a positive mindset.
Yeah.
Right? If you know, we are ultimately going to be responsible for affecting any change. So, you know, if we wallow in the past, if we continue to let that play with our buying psychology and our general health, it's going to affect us. All right? The past is the past. We can't do anything about it. It's time to look forward. What would I do? You know, this could be that take the medicine, you know, little cut on the hand and just put some salt into it and rub it in. And then that's it. That bit's gone.
Mm.
You know, like we need to look forward. How would I look forward? Well, I'd want to do a better assessment of both of these assets before I'd made any specific recommendation. But we absolutely going to need to probably cut our losses on one of them, and that should free up some cash flow to get a better asset. So I love holding property, you know that, but in some cases there is a time where we cut our losses because the opportunity cost is too great in terms of putting our money into another marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other one in Perth is, I mean, Perth's, you know, bumbling along the bottom, so it's got upside in its future, and it's their principal place of residence at the moment, so it's still serving another purpose. But I'd tend to agree. Kalgoorlie, it's not like you're in Mount Price or Parabadoo or anything, which is in the very north of the state, and it's totally remote. At least you've still got access to a capital city, you know, 6 hours down the road in Kalgoorlie. But I'd agree.
Yeah. The Kalgoorlie one's obviously the most challenging. I mean, even though it's close to probably cash flow, well, 90%, no, it wouldn't be. It's still costing you money out of pocket.
Mm.
So maybe someone else who has a bigger deposit who wants to come in and just get a cash flow, that's what Kalgoorlie will give them. And we're not focusing on the negative, but as part of the planning process we need to do, it's going to take a while to sell. You know, the days on market in Kalgoorlie would be probably in excess of 300 days on market for an average property. So the reality is you know, officially and potentially unofficially, we're on the market in that particular area. So I'd be talking to the agents to sort of work that through. So gold mining town, gold prices are still going all right. There has been some investment into that area, but the reality is that the upkeep of the mines requires less people than the capital works of the mines. And when gold prices were sitting at, I don't know, $1,800 an ounce, life was pretty good and businesses would put money into those areas and they'd need accommodation. And that's why, you know, when you did buy, you bought right through that early part of the mining boom, and you come on the other side of it. Now, if our situation was different, we had really strong cash flows, we'd hold on to that. But because we've got two assets that are technically underperforming, we need to reboot at least on one of them, possibly on two of them.
So discuss the ways you get yourselves out of sticky situations like this. One, stay positive. Two, get some serious independent professional advice.
Yeah.
Cash
flows will tell us the story.
Yeah.
But we're not going to... This is like a farmer who's planted three crops over 3 years and then failed on every crop.
Mm.
You know, we've lost money, in a sense, because of the opportunity cost. But guess what? You know, if we keep moving forward, keep getting up and having a go, you know, in 3 to 5 years, we'll start to see some sunshine reappearing.
There you go, Lyle. Thank you for that. There you go, folks. Q&A day. There's a few key points there. Remember last year we were told that we didn't summarise? I've even taken some notes, mate. So
Please do.
How's this bit of gold, Ivis? Happiness equals big rocks in the jar. I said it earlier before, but that's just right up there with Ben. I think we should tweak that. Cash flows will tell the story. In any decision, there's an opportunity cost measure. I think Fernando will be sort of pondering that.
Yep.
Interest-only loans are okay, despite the fact that you got some conflicting advice from the financial planner and the mortgage broker there.
Yep.
Investing after 40 years needs you to determine what's important and also determine...
how long you've got.
How long you've got. And then the last point, Ben, and I think it's a key one, keep positive mindset. If you've had to go two steps back before you go one step forward, stay positive, because property is a forgiving asset class if you play the long game.
Yep.
So
I mean, think about this. You know, to keep your mind positive on the long game, because you know, we've talked about last year a bit about winter is coming in the apartment market, and we're starting to see that play out. But there will be times in all markets where it's going to be pretty ordinary. If you ask people around how happy they were between 2007 and 2011 in the Sydney market, they're all like, why are we servicing this mortgage? Mm. This place is worth, you know, nothing. And then 60% growth in the last 4 or 5 years. Whew, you get that. So, you know, the thing that keeps me positive longer term is that over the next two generations, so the next two decades, our population is going to potentially double.
Mm.
Now, those generations, so 15-year generations, mm. so the next 30, 40, we could have, you know, 40 million people in Australia.
Generations in the future will not even fathom the idea of buying real estate, so some of these stories will be...
Got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, shelter's important. That's why we love it.
There you go, folks. 99 not out for Ben and I. So we've got our 100th episode next week, where it's a big celebration of the last 2 years. We're really excited about that. We're also going to announce the winner of our Facebook competition. Yeah. Obviously, is there a bit of time between now and next week to for our listeners, or is it all closed off?
Go
to the Facebook, and I'll give you an incentive to go to Facebook and like us. Ben mentioned that map of Melbourne and Sydney, thanks to CoreLogic.
Yep.
We're going to post both of those pictures up on Facebook, so you go and check that out. While you're there, like us, that would be wonderful. And also, we have got some... we're not going to rest on our laurels here on the Property Couch. We've got some exciting developments on the podcast.
For our next 100 episodes.
For our next 100 episodes.
We get over Australia Day.
After we get over Australia Day. So we'll announce that... next week.
You know what I'm really looking forward to?
What's that?
Ibis in travelling the show.
Yeah, well, we just put that on record.
Yeah, it is.
Because off air, she was saying, no way. Yeah. So, folks, go to Facebook and let us know if Ibis should intro next week.
We still won't show your face. Yes. But you'll hear her voice for the first time. So
you will.
Yeah, so unless lots she resigns and quits work in the next week.
But lots and lots of really cool stuff planned. So stay tuned. And, Ben, also this episode is the last episode, BT? Before Trump. He's inaugurated tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I wonder what podcast will be like
under Trump. So he shares Trump today, everybody. So he shares today. Just kidding. That wasn't advice.
Only serious. And of course, as I say every week, social media, at The Property Couch for Insta, Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter, but also for Ben and I at Bryce Holdaway. And at Ben Kingsley, if you want to follow us two mugs as well on social media, Ben.
Yeah, we're mugs.
We are mugs. And, mate, we're going to retire this segment.
I know, it's good, isn't it? I'm the happiest one in the room.
We're going to retire this segment. But,
what's the segment?
I don't know. It's your segment.
Oh, it's the sign-off.
International sign-off.
International sign-off. Yep. Okay, so today, because next week I've got one up my sleeve.
Have you?
Yep. That's good. Next week for Australia Day, got one up my sleeve. Your beauty, got one up my sleeve.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. Our neighbours, our Javanese neighbours, just on the doorstep. Yeah. Indonesian friends, Javanese. I'm going to try some Javanese. Okay. Now, there's a really easy one, and there's a really hard one on this piece of paper that I'm holding.
Give us the hard one.
All right. Just for a joke, for a laugh, for everyone. Okay. Kapanginghi Malhi Bengyang. I have no idea what that means, but it's obviously goodbye.
Nice. That's close to Malaysia, so yeah. How was that?
No, that's, yeah. Kepanginghi Mali Bengyang.
I'll I've said it for 99 episodes, and I'll probably say it for another one, but I always reckon your first run is always your best.
Okay, well, then the other one is Dada.
Oh, well.
So now that's why I was attracted to it. Dada, Dada.
Well, mate, we like to set the bar high, but there you go, folks. 100th episode next week. Last chance to get on Facebook and enter for Ben and I to catch up with you. We'll run through your situation. We'll talk about your plans and everything. Help you set your plans. We'll go through it with a fine tooth comb. We'll share a bit of lunch if you're in Melbourne. If you're not, we'll go over Skype or Zoom or something. Go to meeting so that we can.
If you're in New York, we'll come and meet you for lunch.
Yeah.
Have we got a budget for that?
Yeah. If Ibis resigns, we will. But only serious. So there you go, folks. Until next week.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. See you, folks.